Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC on ESPN Plus. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Good to see you on this Friday. We'll be joined in just a little bit by Franklin Buff and Ale Moreno, checking in on Juventus as they look to extend their lead in Serie A, plus looking ahead to the FA Cup on the weekend. Julie Foudy will join us as well. Saturday, the beginning of the NWSL Challenge Cup. We'll discuss that, plus FIFA's decision to award the next Women's World Cup to Australia and New Zealand. But we start with a story three decades in the making. Liverpool, for the first time in 30 years, are champions of England after Manchester City fell 2-1 to Chelsea on Thursday. The city celebrating the club's 19th top flight domestic title. Liverpool 23 points clear with 7 matches to play. All of Liverpool seemingly celebrating Jurgen Klopp and his men's many accomplishments. Not in that celebration, but surely there in spirit, our very own Stevie Nicol. He joins us now. So does Stuart Robson. Stevie, a Liverpool legend. I have to start with you. You were on the team the last time this happened in 1990. When you finally got the news on Thursday, what did you feel?
Well, I've got to tell you, I can't help but being the former player because 30 years ago when we won the league, that was expected. That was normal. And so I kind of went straight into, well, we've got to win it again next year. And I couldn't believe when Jordan Henderson said that as well. But a couple of hours later, when I'd settled down, I had a couple of beers, and I started thinking about it. How amazing it was that it's taken 30 years. But I'll tell you what a team. If there was ever a 30-year wait worth waiting for, this accomplishment and this team is worth waiting for, because it's an absolute joy, and I can't see it ending anytime soon. You know, for a couple of decades of supporters who've never seen anybody lifting the Championship, the Premier League, I mean, this is obviously just mind-blowing for them. But for wizened old guys like me, and for the many Liverpool fans who were there in 1990, this is what they've been telling their kids and their grandkids and whoever wants to listen. This is what we're about. This is how good we are. And now, all these people like me can say, I told you that's how good we used to be. Because this side's as good as any of the great Liverpool sides that's ever been.
Stevie, A, where are you now? And B, where were you when you got the good news?
Well, I'm actually in Philadelphia. I'm actually getting ready to go play golf. And I found out on the way down, my good lady I, Eleanor, were driving, listening to the game on the radio. And of course, as soon as the final whistle went, I have to say, I didn't jump up for joy because I was driving. But I went into the old Liverpool mode of, okay, we've won it. Pat on the back, right, now we need to go and win it again next year. So I was sitting in the car.
Bravo, as far as the celebration goes, on yesterday's show I asked if it was a little bit awkward, you know, to win it without actually being on the field. Then you see the video of Jurgen Klopp celebrating and the rest of the players celebrating. A title's a title, isn't it, no matter how it's won?
It certainly is, and they knew it was coming. They've been magnificent. Stevie's talked about what a great side they are, and they have to be one of the greatest sides we've ever seen because of the run they've had, the way they just relentlessly beat teams. Even when they didn't play well, they made sure they won games. Remember, they're the European champions as well. These are great players and a great team, and you've got to give credit to Jurgen Klopp. You know, people questioned him for the first couple of years. Was he going to change Liverpool? Was he going to win anything with them? Well, he's certainly proved that he's worth all the money they spent on him. He's worth all the players that he's brought into the club. He's changed it around. The attitude, the philosophy, everything is right about it at the moment. Liverpool could go on winning and winning for years to come.
Stevie, is it just down to Jurgen Klopp? Is that oversimplifying?
Well, I think it's oversimplifying, but I'll tell you what. I mean, you talk about Liverpool have had absolute legendary managers in the past. And I'm talking Shankly, I'm talking Dalglish. And Klopp has to be up there. Not because they're European champions and not because they're Premier League champions, but the way they play the game. Liverpool is about attacking the opposition and getting after them and squeezing the life out of them. And that's exactly what these three legends, in my opinion, the three greatest Liverpool managers, obviously Bob Paisley's in there as well, but they were all about squeezing the life out of the opposition and enjoying playing. You know, you look at this Liverpool team and you look at the past Liverpool teams that were champions. They played with a smile on their face. They played with determination. and they would do anything for the manager. These managers that I've mentioned, every single player that played for them would throw themselves on a hand grenade if they asked them to. That's what Klopp means to these players. And so, yes, the ability of the players is why they're winning the title. But the way he's setting them up, the way he's motivated them, the way tactically he's got them playing in certain games. I mean, the guy is absolutely phenomenal.
Robbo, probably not much debate that he's among the best managers in the world, but do you think he's actually right now, based on this accomplishment, the best manager in the world?
At the moment, he's the European champion. He's the Premier League champion. They've won by a record. They're going to win by a record amount of points, I would imagine. It's been a great run they've been on. And as Stevie said, it's the way they play the game. Everybody knows how Liverpool play. They press the ball high up the field. They counter-attack quickly. They've got lots of players going forward, full-backs breaking forward, getting crosses into the box. But nobody can do anything about it. And I go back to when Stevie was playing and the great Liverpool sides. When you went to Anfield and when Liverpool came to you, the hardest thing it was to play for. You couldn't get on the ball. You couldn't make things happen because their pressing game was so good. That's what Klopp has brought to Liverpool once again.
Stevie, they're on 86 points. The record is 100. Does it matter? Should this team chase that record given the opportunity that they have, which is now to rest some players or to etch their names further in the history books?
I'm not so sure that you want to rest anybody. I think the only thing in Klopp's mind and the players' mind is to win. You know, that's always been what's expected at Liverpool, is to win. And to go out and sort of diminish the way that we're talking about them now, for them to go out between now and the end of the season and not produce what they've been doing would be sad. And I don't see it happening. I've talked about the great managers, and the great managers don't care what's at stake. The only thing at stake is winning. And Jurgen Klopp will be sending out whatever team to win the game and to get after it and to play the way he wants Liverpool to play. Yes, he could probably try and blood in a couple of youngsters, but not at the expense of winning. And I don't think that's what he'll do. He will not sacrifice winning every time he goes on the field for anything.
Robbo, as a neutral, I want to see Liverpool chase City's record, but you can't deny the huge advantage they would get from giving their guys a break. Manchester City, for example, could be playing well into August.
Yeah, but I think they want to play as well as they can, week in, week out. That's the philosophy that Jurgen Klopp has got. They want to win as many games as possible. They want to break that record, and I can't see any reason why they won't. Yes, Stevie said they might blood one or two younger players. They might just rotate the squad, but they will still ask, or he will ask, for them to play at their maximum week in, week out. So I can't see them resting on their laurels.
Stevie, one last order of business before we cut you loose. And this is Dan Thomas's fault, so you can blame him. He's drudged up the predictions from the beginning of the season. You picked Manchester City to win the Premier League. What do you have to say now?
Thank goodness I'm wrong. That's what I've got to say. Sometimes it's good to be wrong. This is the perfect example.
Robbo, you picked Liverpool. What did you see that Stevie didn't?
Well, I changed my mind on the Community Shield when Liverpool played really well. I could see there was a determination about them. They outran Manchester City in that game. Yes, they lost on penalties, but I thought they looked the better side. And they had that bit between their teeth, having just won the European Cup. You knew that they were going to be the top side, and that's why I chose them.
Thanks, Robbo. Thanks, Stevie. Robbo, don't go far. You're back for Extra Time. We'll be joined by Shaka Hislop. Send your questions. #FCExtraTime. City action on Friday. League leaders Juventus played host to Lecce. They won 4-0. Paulo Dybala opening the scoring. Cristiano Ronaldo on the score sheet as well, as Juventus open up a 7-point lead over second place Lazio. Of course, they do. Lazio have a game in hand. We welcome back Stuart Robson. We also welcome in Ale Merino. Ale, is a comfortable win for Juventus, but the goal doesn't come until the 53rd minute. It is a team in Lecce in the relegation places. What'd you make of the performance?
Comfortable in the end. Comfortable in the scoreline, but uncomfortable for long periods of time, especially in the first half. And we're talking about a Lecce team that came into this match having the worst defensive record in Serie A with 60 goals allowed. So it's not like you were playing against Beckenbauer, Baresi, Maldini, and Cannavaro in that back line. It's a team that struggles to defend. And yet, Juventus, as we have seen since they started back up playing, they struggle to create chances. They really do. There is no team creativity. There's no individual creativity. And so therefore they become very predictable and so slow in their possession. Then there's a red card and you think, well, things are going to open. No, not so much. And it wasn't really until the second half when Lecce themselves make a mistake. Then Dybala finds that ball on top of the 18-yard box and scores a beautiful goal. Got to give him that. It was a beautiful finish by Paulo Dybala. And then after that, Lecce had no answers and nothing else to give. And therefore, Juventus took over. But up until that moment, there was nothing really encouraging about the Juventus performance. And it was very much the same sort of performance that we have seen since they started playing after the pandemic or after the suspension of play, where we have seen a team that has difficulties in the final third, has difficulties in quick transition. There is no 1v1 situations and people breaking other people down and defenders down. It wasn't until Douglas Costa comes on the field that makes a difference. Other than that, I guess Higuain coming on the field and scoring a goal, that's a positive thing for Juventus looking into the future. But other than that, there weren't exactly a whole lot of encouraging signs from this Juventus performance.
Robbo, not just today, but as Ale points out, since the return to play, what have you made of Juventus' performances?
Well, exactly the same as Ali just said. Up until the sending off, they hadn't created anything. There was no cohesion in their play. There was the movement from the front players. They don't start moving until the ball gets into midfield. Sometimes when Bonucci's got the ball at the back, they need to spread the opposition. I'd like to see Ronaldo try and run in behind. Dybala always wants to come short. Bernardeschi was the only one that tried to make runs in behind, but he ran offside two or three times. And Bentancur tried to make runs beyond, but it wasn't enough. And it was too slow and too easy for Lecce to close the ball down. And Lecce, actually, when they started to play out from the back and play into midfield, they created one or two slight opportunities with their right wing back getting through. So it was a poor performance, and they were allowed to eventually win the game because of the sending off. And it was the same against Bologna. They were playing really poorly against Bologna until Denswil inexplicably brings down De Ligt in the box and it allows Juventus off the hook. So nothing at the moment looks good from my point of view for Juventus.
Speaking of Juventus, the swap deal, Pjanic for Arthur in Barcelona, seems to be done. Reports now that Arthur will indeed be in Turin soon for a medical. Ale, we had Sid on the show yesterday. He was talking about the financial reasons why Barcelona would do this on the field. Do you think this is a good move for Barcelona?
I think it's a good move in terms of moving on from Arthur, because he's a player that I think there were expectations for him, and although he has been solid, I suppose, for Barcelona, there isn't a whole lot of him that you think, you know what, this is a player that is going to be a long-term solution for Barcelona. And so therefore, I really think that they have in Riqui Puig a better option, a guy out of the midfield that gives you a change of pace, gives you some energy, and in fact, I would give him a whole lot more opportunities. In terms of Miralem Pjanic coming to Barcelona, I don't know what it does for Barcelona. It's not an upgrade to Artur. You're actually getting older. I don't feel that it's a long-term solution, and maybe it's just a stopgap, and having a player that gives you an option off the bench, or maybe a squad player for that matter, a little bit of depth, a little bit of experience. But other than that, I don't see Pjanic as a long-term answer for any sort of the problems that Barcelona has, because if you consider what Barcelona is in the midfield right now, it's a bunch of players that struggle to get around because their legs are not quite there anymore. Well, that's very much what Pjanic is right now. He's a player that can pass the ball around and can move around in terms of just keeping the ball going. But him, individually, physically, can no longer compete in a transition game and can no longer cover the ground that he once did.
Bravo, kind of like Ale, Barcelona fans don't seem too excited about Pjanic. What do you think about his potential fit at Barcelona?
I agree entirely with what Ali's saying. He can't get around the pitch. But what I'd like to see, I think he's been wasted at Juventus by Sarri, because when he was playing for Rome, he had Daniele De Rossi in behind, and he was the holding midfield player, and Pjanic became a very good playmaker. He picked out passes, he was a brilliant free kick taker, he created goals for other people. His passing, his long-range passing, was the best aspect of his play. Under Sarri, he's just, as Ali said, pass it 10 yards, just keeps things ticking over, like Jorginho did for Chelsea and Napoli for Sarri. So I don't think Sarri's used him in the best possible way. Maybe at Barcelona, if he plays further forward, he might be able to pick out those passes for better runs from the front players. So we might see a little bit more from Pjanic, but he's not going to be in the team every week, I don't think.
One more deal, perhaps not as advanced. Achraf Hakimi reportedly going to be sold to Inter Milan. Of course, at Dortmund now on loan from Real Madrid. Robbo, this would seem to be a huge coup for Inter Milan, who are obviously still chasing Juventus.
Yeah, I think he's ideally suited for Inter because of the position that he plays, or the way he plays his fullback position. As you know, Antonio Conte always plays with two wing backs. He's already got three. He's got Candreva, Young, and Moses playing in those positions. And he's now bought, going to buy Hakimi, it looks like. Hakimi's an excellent player. He's got great pace. He can get backwards, he can get forwards. He can pick out a pass when he gets into those attacking areas. I thought he was one of the best players at the African Cup of Nations. I think it'll be a major coup for Antonio Conte and Inter, and will certainly improve them going forward.
Ale, what do you think? Hakimi and Conte a good fit?
Oh, yeah. And I'm surprised that Dortmund allows Hakimi to walk out the door, because I think he has been one of their most consistent and best players this year in the Bundesliga. And so, but then they go after Meunier, and that, of course, tells you that they're planning to go away from Hakimi. And while I know it was a loan deal at Dortmund, you may think, well, we've had this guy here, and he has done well for us. Maybe we keep him because he has been an important part of what we have been able to do on the field. But in terms of Hakimi moving to Inter, it makes a whole lot of sense. Because, and this is the favorite position for Robo, Stewie loves a wing-back. Well, there isn't a quicker wing-back out there than Hakimi. That guy can get up and down. And when he goes up with a purpose. He goes up with the idea of either finishing the play himself or providing service or really joining in the attack. It's not just a token player, but an actual outlet, natural outlet down that right-hand side that gives you options in the attack. Could do a whole lot better defensively, but I think the speed makes up for some of his positional mistakes. And so, therefore, I just think he's ideal for whatever Antonio Conte is trying to do with Inter.
All right, thanks, guys. Another reminder, ESPN Plus, your exclusive home for Serie A. Saturday's schedule includes second-place Lazio. They'll host Fiorentina Sunday. What a day. Milan and Roma. Napoli, the cup winners, taking on Spal. And then we'll finish up 3:45 on ESPN Plus. Parma against Inter Milan.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
One look at the Champions League odds suggests Manchester City is one of the best teams in the world. However, their performance on Thursday in a 2-1 defeat against Chelsea might leave some room for doubt. For more, we welcome back Stuart Robson. We welcome in Frank Leboeuf. Stuart, I'll start with you. Manchester City have a 2-1 lead over Real Madrid in the Champions League whenever we do get to that. But based on their performance yesterday, they've got to be worried when they're going to start running up against real competition, right?
I'm not so sure about that. I thought in terms of their possession and some of their football, they were excellent against Chelsea. But defensively, they made mistakes. They were caught on the counter-attack on a couple of occasions. They were sloppy in defence. But I think come the big games against Real Madrid and when they then progress, I think they're a good enough side to take on most teams. They played very well against Arsenal. They played very well against Burnley. I don't think they've got too many concerns. Yes, they didn't defend well against Chelsea, but overall, they're a very, very good side. They're going to be hard to beat in the Champions League.
Frank, how much faith do you have in this City defence after what we saw on Thursday? We see them dominate Arsenal, Burnley, but against higher quality competition, it's a different story.
It is a different story, and it's true that they really have a problem defensively, and they make silly mistakes. I mean, the first goal, the Pulisic goal, with the misunderstanding between Mendy and Gundogan, shows how much they have to work. It's not the bad pass from Mendy, it's what's going on after. How they defend, how Mendy tried to get the ball straight after making the mistakes, where we had to just block a little bit Pulisic to allow his teammate to cover him and come back. As Stuart said, I think City played well at the position of the ball. They play at Stamford Bridge away from home. They dominated the game. I think we shouldn't demine too much their performance. They made mistakes, and that's crucial in Champions League, of course. But I'm pretty much sure that for a competition like that, it will be a different motivation for the players. They know they can't catch. They knew they cannot catch Liverpool. They feel that they cannot be caught by the others, so they're going to finish second. Now, it's different in the Champions League. They know they're going to have a big game against Real Madrid in the second leg, and then that they can win the Champions League. So we will find a kind of eye of a tiger in some Manchester City players' face, rather than seeing people not very convinced on what they have to do at the end of the game against Chelsea yesterday.
All right, speaking of the Champions League, Timo Werner is opting out. Here's something his agent had to say. It would have been anything but a good start for Timo at his new club if he had to return to Leipzig for preparation in the Champions League after the break. It was the joint vote of all parties involved and not just Timo's decision that he should move to Chelsea on July 1st and not until mid or late August, which of course would have let him finish out the Champions League with Leipzig. I don't think anybody, guys, on this show has said that they would have actually stayed with their team other than Don Hutchison. Frank, wouldn't you have wanted to stay with your team and see this out?
I would have played for my club, which is still my club, and I want to play. It's Champions League, for God's sake. I want to see what's going on. It's a special end of Champions League where you have to play maybe three games to win the Champions League, and who knows what can happen there. Leipzig has a chance like any other club. Of course, it's going to be more difficult maybe than Bayern Munich or Manchester City, but it's a different system where you don't have two legs, you have only one game, so it's a very short timing. So everything is possible. I think it's pretty sad for the fans, for the club, and especially for Timo Werner to not choose the other way and play the Champions League, give everything until the end, and think after about his new club and his new career. I think it's sad in a way.
Robbo, what would you have done?
I think I would have done what Frank just said. I'd have stayed and tried to play. But I can understand why Timo Werner, the club, and everybody is suggesting that he goes to Chelsea and that's what he's going to do. Because we had an experience many, many years ago when Paul Gascoigne was playing for Spurs and he was already signed for Lazio. And on the very last game in the FA Cup final, he ruptured his cruciate. And he went to Lazio as an injured player and never really fulfilled his potential at Lazio. It was a real problem for him. And that's what Timo Werner certainly wouldn't want, to get injured playing the Champions League and then start his Chelsea career being injured and not being able to play.
Well, let's change gears a little bit here. Look at the Premier League, the middle of the Premier League table. It's where we find Arsenal there in ninth after a 2-0 victory Thursday over Southampton. A victory very much aided by Southampton's goalie, Alex McCarthy. Robbo, it's the first time we've had you on the show since the restart. Did you see some signs of hope in Arsenal's performance on Thursday?
A little bit. The enthusiasm from the youngsters. I mean, they were gifted that first goal, but still Nketiah chased it down. And that's been the key thing for Arsenal when they have played quite well. And the plus points are the youngsters are giving everything. They're, you know, and that's what you get from young players. They're enthusiastic. They do what the coach wants. That's why they're in the team at the moment. The problem for Arsenal is that some of the experienced players, Mikel Arteta can't trust. You know, he's not playing Ozil. He's obviously on his way, well, not on his way out, but he's certainly not in favour. Lacazette's not in favour at the moment, and Nketiah was the centre-forward. Aubameyang played well against Southampton, but didn't play very well against Man City, and has had his problems. He looks as though he's not that enthusiastic in one or two of the games. So, Arsenal have got problems, there's no doubt about that. Mikel Arteta is going to have to sort things out when he can make changes. He's going to have to get some players out, he's going to have to get new players in. But I think he's got the basis of a decent side, not a very good side, with those youngsters that he's playing with at the moment.
Stuart, some real head-scratching moves, including all the talk of David Luiz and the extension. What do you make of it?
I can't believe that they have extended his contract. David Luiz, if you want somebody to play out from the back, he's an excellent player. If you want someone to be a good defender and concentrate week in, week out, and not make mistakes, he's not the player you want. And at the moment, Arsenal need solidity at the back. Mustafi is not a particularly good defender. He's another player that's decent on the ball, but you know, Frank would I think agree with me. David Luiz and Mustafi doesn't make a good centre half partnership. And to give David Luiz another extension on his contract, that can't be good news for Arsenal and the way they're trying to build their back line.
Frank, I've heard some suggestions on this show that you could move his position, just move him further up the field. At this point in his career, can you really do that to David Luiz and expect something?
I don't know what you can expect right now from David Luiz. I mean, it's always been a problem playing a center half during his career. I think when he went to Paris Saint-Germain, they put him midfield, and I think it was his right position because he makes lots of mistakes defensively, so he could have been covered if he's a midfield player. Nowadays, you know, with him getting older, so not being as performant that he was as a midfield, it's hard to go a little bit forward. But I don't know as well why the extending his contract, because he's not an example on the field. And I'm not sure he's a real support in the dressing room. I never heard that that David Luiz was a leader in the dressing room for Arsenal since he arrived. So I don't know what he can bring to the Gunners, except costing lots of money for, almost nothing. So that's very something that annoys me, because I know Arsenal are not in a very good shape, even financially now. They have to get rid of some players and extend the players they don't really need. That's crazy.
Rabo, do you buy the leadership narrative being spun about David Luiz?
Well, from what I hear, that David Luiz is a joker and he gets on well with everyone in the dressing room, but he's not actually a leader that's going to make the team win games. I don't think there's been too many leaders at Arsenal for quite some while, and that's been one of the problems. You know, and then other players take it the wrong way. We look at someone like Guendouzi, who wants to go and kick people and argue with the referee and make out as if he's working really hard, but actually he's lacking discipline. And that's what a lot of the Arsenal players do. They lack discipline, both in the tactical development of the game and also the way they behave out on the field. So that's another area that Mikel Arteta has got to change.
Right, Arsenal still in the FA Cup, sixth round this weekend. Manchester United play on Saturday. Arsenal, Chelsea, Manchester City all playing on Sunday. Rob, I'll start with you. What are you most looking forward to from the weekend slate?
Well, I have to go with the game that I'm covering. I'm doing the Newcastle-Man City game. I think it's a massive game for Newcastle. Yes, Man City will probably dominate possession, but Newcastle have had a good cup run, the best cup run they've had for a long time. They've got some exciting players. Almiron will run with the ball, you know. So they've got players that can make things happen, but I think that's the game I'm looking forward to. There'll be some good other ones, but Newcastle-Man City, that could be a tight one.
Frank, the FA Cup, always your favourite competition. What are you watching this weekend?
Obviously, I'm going to follow Chelsea. They play against the third of in the Premier League, Leicester. That's going to be fantastic. And I could have watched Sheffield United against Arsenal, I think, because it could be crucial for the two clubs to if one of them loses. But Leicester or Chelsea, I think it's going to be a tight game and tactically very, very interesting, with lots of runs and physicality, but also the pace of the game. I think it's going to be high. So I would go for that game, because I think there is lots of things to see and to watch. Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll be all over the FA Cup on tomorrow's show, especially Manchester United and Norwich, and of course the finale, the last day of action in the Bundesliga season.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Let's have a look at the tables then. We'll start in the championship. West Brom and Leeds even on points. Leeds, though, with a game in hand. They'll play Fulham on the weekend. Brentford all the way up to third after they beat West Brom on Friday in the lone match in the championship. In Spain, here's a look at La Liga table. Madrid and Barcelona also even on points with 7 matches to go. Of course, Madrid holding the head-to-head tiebreaker. Barcelona will play Saturday against Celta Vigo. Celta Vigo in 16th place. Madrid on Sunday against Espanyol, who are in dead last place. By the way, if you want to hear Alejandro Moreno and Stuart Robson go back and forth on the Pjanic-Arthur swap, definitely download the latest edition of our podcast. Meanwhile, in Germany, Bundesliga is set to wrap up play on Saturday. Bayern already headed to their 8th straight German crown. The real story, though, in Germany comes down to the race for 4th place and that last Champions League spot between Bayer Leverkusen and Mönchengladbach. Gladbach right now with a 2-point cushion. Leverkusen hosts Mainz. Gladbach, meanwhile, hosts Hertha Berlin. All right, that's all the time we've got for this show. Thanks to everyone involved. Frank LaBeouf, Ale Moreno, and of course, Stevie Nicol, who we found off vacation to celebrate Liverpool's title. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this Friday edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. Stuart Robson, Shaka Hislop, Sebastian Salazar here with you. We've got your questions off of Twitter. Frank McManaman submits the first one. Robbo, how happy are you about predicting Liverpool as Premier League champions? Alternately, Shaka, are you disappointed that you chose City? Shaka, we'll start with you.
I'm not disappointed I chose City. I think most people did to start the season.
I am very surprised as to exactly how good Liverpool were and deserving champion. So, short answer to that is no, I don't feel disappointed at all.
Bravo, chance to pop your chest out here.
Well,
don't give them that chance.
The Shield, where they played against Man City and they ran Man City off the park in the second half. They were also the European champions, and I think that gave them the confidence for this season, and that's why I thought they might have that extra edge. So, yeah, I can pop my chest out and say that I got it right for once. Not often.
Two ex-Hammers on the panel. Is there any hope left for West Ham? Shaka, you first.
Yes, there is. West Ham still have to play Norwich, and the final game of this season is Aston Villa. Villa's running themselves isn't very easy, so hopefully they'll be down by the last game of the season, which should make it a formality for West Ham in playing an already relegated side. I know that's also that has its own challenges, and similarly I don't think Bournemouth has an easy run in either. I think as a result West Ham get the points they need just.
Bravo, you optimistic?
Yeah, I'm going to go along with Shaka. I was really disappointed with their performance against Spurs, against a Spurs side that looks slightly ragged at times. They still haven't got a shape that Mourinho wants. I would like to see Bowen get more chances. I think he's very good on the right hand, so he looked their best player going forward. So I think West Ham will just avoid relegation, but it will be just about. They're not a good side at the moment. David Moyes hasn't really inspired them, but they'll get away with it.
For Shaka, how is it like playing under Harry Redknapp? Any transfer stories he has to share with us? Shaka?
My lawyer isn't on this extra time, so I've got no transfer stories to share with anyone. That being said, I love playing under Harry.
Ever.
Harry is one of the real characters of the game, and I think his strength as a man, as a manager was in his man management skills. He got the best out of players. I mean, he certainly got the best out of me. You could probably see the same for players like Paolo Di Canio, Trevor Sinclair, and the list is endless. But it was always fun. It was always interesting.
Bravo. Favorite league to commentate on?
I've been commentating on Serie A for quite some while, and I really enjoy it. The only disappointment sometimes is there aren't too many crowds, no crowd at the moment, but when some of the big games are taking place and you look at the Stadio Olimpico and it's half empty at times, but in terms of tactics, in terms of the way the game's played, in terms of the sort of atmosphere that you can get when the grounds are full, I love commentating on Serie A. I think it's a good league and much better than people give it credit for.
Speaking of Serie A, Shaka, should Manchester City sign Koulibaly?
Yeah. Manchester City need centre-back. I don't feel they have enough quality in that position and certainly not enough depth. I was surprised that they didn't address that last summer. They have to this. There aren't many that are available. And I believe Koulibaly, you can prize him away this time around, given everything he's had to endure and some of his displeasures that he's already voiced.
Robert, which team do you enjoy watching the most this season and why is it inevitably Atalanta?
I'm going to say Atalanta, as it's been sort of said that I should say that. Atalanta, on their day, are a magnificent side. They can beat anybody, even when they're 2-0 down as they were against Lazio. They can play outstanding football. They didn't even have Ilicic on the field at the time. Javi Gomez is the player that makes them tick, but they've got good players all around the field. They play with a certain system which they know, but they can change it. There's a lot of rotation in their position, and you always fancy them to score goals. And I'm looking forward to seeing them in the Champions League. They could be dark horses.
All right, gentlemen, we opened extra time talking about your predictions from last year. Appropriate, I guess, that we would go for way too early predictions for next season. Early prediction of your top three Premier League title contenders for next season, Shaka.
Top three contenders for next season. I'm going to go with the obvious two, Liverpool and Manchester City. I'm assuming you aren't asking for them in order, so I'm just going to blurt them out and don't hold this against me in 12 months' time and ask me if I'm disappointed and get Robert to pop out his chest even more. And third, you know, Manchester United. But I'm not overly convinced by that. But the other contenders have
just as many question marks.
Shaka, say that one more time for me, just so I hear it good.
Why are you doing this to me, Seb? I'm saying that as we sit right now, the team with the fewest question marks ahead of next season, all other things being equal, is Manchester United.
Bravo, you agree?
I'm not going to agree on this one. I think it'd be tight, but I'm going to go for Chelsea. Timo Werner joining them. They've got one or two other. I think they're going to spend quite a bit of money. They look as though they're getting their game together. Some of the young players are still developing. Frank Lampard looks as though he's doing a decent job and he's got the backing of the players. I think Chelsea will come third and it'll be neck and neck between Liverpool and Manchester City. Liverpool just to nick it.
All right. That'll do it for this edition of Extra Time, Shaka. Stuart, thank you very much. We'll be back on tomorrow's show. Don't miss it. Last day of the Bundesliga plus Manchester United in action in the FA Cup.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway to the confidence of knowing that GEICO always has your back with 24/7 access to claims service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.